Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and this is Understanding Classical Music with Kerhoff at the keyboard.
Hi there. Today I'd like to talk with you about a word that we use in the musical world to describe the louds and softs of music, and that word is dynamics. It's quite obvious that the loudness with which you play a particular passage would deeply affect its meaning and impact. Just imagine, I don't know, the beginning of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, that dramatic opening, and just imagine if it were... It has a completely different impact. And so dynamics are very, very important in how we perceive music, how we feel the expressive power of music. Likewise, imagine a delicate piece like Debussy's Clair de Lune. And you know what I'm going to do. Imagine it extra loud. Yikes. It has a completely different effect. So like saying a word to a friend loud or saying that same word soft, it has a different meaning, a different emotional content. Likewise, the dynamics with which a composer asks us to perform the music completely change the way we experience it. But you see, there's more to dynamics than simply how loud or how soft. Most of the music we hear, after all, is not just one note at a time, but layers of sounds. And so quite often, a composer will have multiple layers of dynamics at the same time. Here's a piece by Robert Schumann from about, 1830. A beautiful piano piece called simply Romance. Now, the melody is actually not at the top of this composition. It's kind of buried in the middle down here. And the accompaniment is both above it and below it. And so here again, here's the piece, the melody in the middle and the accompaniment surrounding it. Now, let's just pretend that there were no dynamic differences there, and if all the notes were exactly the same volume, it would be actually completely incoherent. Listen to it once. This is the same exact piece, but all the dynamics taken out of it. Yuck. So you can see that with music that has lots going on, harmony, melody, dynamics serve not simply to make it this part's loud and this part soft, but also to highlight certain aspects of the musical texture. In this case, the melody in the middle, more prominent. So we can think of dynamics almost like shading in painting. You know, if you look at a painting and some areas of the painting are more bright and they seem to be more prominent or more in the foreground, and areas more darkly shaded recede into the background. And that's exactly what happens in musical dynamics. Here's another example. This is a piece by Rachmaninoff from the early 20th century, and all kinds of dynamics going on in here. First of all, very much like in the Schumann piece, the melody is down below, and so if you're not careful, the accompaniment would actually hide the melody, except thanks to dynamics, we can hear the melody more prominently. Without dynamics, you would just hear the... So we have dynamics then for the shading, for the more prominent melody, but also within each level, within each dynamic level, let's say, You have lots of ebb and flow of dynamics. You have what we call, simply phrasing or expression, so that the melody isn't just a series of notes, but rather a kind of expressive, very personal, very warm, sighing, pleading melody, again, thanks to the dynamic inflections. So you see, this term dynamics, I can also just simply say the louds and softs within music, are very, very important from the composer's perspective, which material, which ideas, which motives, which melodies he wants or she wants more prominently heard, but also from the performer's side. How do we make it expressive? How do we make it live? How do we make it seem as if it's speaking to us through sound? Musical dynamics.
Wake Forest University professor and Steinway artist Mr. Peter Karoff at the keyboard. You know, Peter's covered everything from Bach to Brahms and beyond on this show, and you'll find past episodes on our website, wfdd.org. Ah, sounds of the summer, exploring the tones and colors of organs in Winston-Salem. It's a performance series that began back in June with a recital by co-founder, award-winning organist Timothy Olson. He played on the 1971 Charles W. McManus organ at the Gemeine House in historic Bethabara Park. Sounds of the Summer continues through August 19th, and along the way, organ lovers sample from the Grooms and Payne instrument at First Baptist Church, the Skinner and Fisk organ at St. Paul's Episcopal, and many others, performed on by some of the Piedmont's finest keyboardists. On Sunday night, August 4th at 7 o'clock, it'll be the 1978 Noack organ at Ardmore United Methodist Church in Winston. Sounds of the Summer co-founder Dreema Lovett will present that program. Dreema and Tim teamed up with Winston-Salem native Centenary United Methodist Church organist emeritus Ray Ebert to create this remarkable performance series. Ray recently dropped by to chat with me about the Mighty Pipe organ, Sounds of the Summer, and more.
Well, three of us decided there should be some more organ recitals in Winston-Salem. And so this spring, Timothy Olson and Dreema Lovett and I had an extended breakfast and laid some groundwork. And then we used something sort of new to me called email and did all our other plans.
Now, I know Tim is a soloist and Tim Olson, teacher at UNCSA Salem College mm-hmm. as well.
Plays recitals all across the country.
And Dreema is an organist, also choir master and music director at Ardmore United Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm. And she also teaches piano and organ students.
How about that?
So that's like a classic job.
So, I mean, you had that in common, but at the same time, three different backgrounds. Was it tough unifying them in terms of the vision for this thing?
Not at all, because we all love organ music, and we thought that there should be a big variety in the kind of sounds. And Dreema came up with the idea, Sounds of the Summer, exploring the tones and colors of organs in Winston-Salem.
Okay, which leads to my next question. I mean, the naysayer would say, oh, come on, why do I need to listen to a whole bunch of different organs? So what's the reason?
Oh, well, the first two recitals were in June, and the first one, the organ had three stops because it was at historic Bethabara.
What's a stop?
Three different sounds, three different sets of pipes. And then the second one was at First Baptist Church, and it had 93 stops.
A little variety there.
So I knew that we were onto something. When we took our curtain call, they stopped applauding, and I said, now, the organ today had three stops. And I said to Dr. Olson, how many stops will the next organ have? And he said, 93. And 80 people went, ooh. Well, that's 80 people at the next recital.
There you go. And what's the feedback been from the audience members besides the ooh?
Well, the numbers have been an indication that it's well supported. The number of people who came to First Baptist were between 250 and 300 people. And we didn't mind at all at the last minute printing some extra programs.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's work you like to get, a little mm-hmm. extra work printing up programs. And so, I mean, I imagine those familiar with the organs, and we've got a lot of great instruments in this region, and those not, you have to be blown away with not only the quality of the performances, but these instruments themselves.
Mm-hmm. Basically, the person who's playing each time is a person who regularly plays that organ. So they know the organ inside out. They know the different kinds of sounds you can hear. And the organs vary. Like the one at Bethabara was very simple. The one at First Baptist, very complex. The one at St. Paul's from the 1920s, someone described it as the sound as liquid velvet, which I think is really cool.
Nice.
The one at Centenary, the acoustics have been restored to just about what they were in 1931, just recently. So now you've got all this shimmer in the room, which you didn't get 2 years ago. That's very exciting.
Yeah, the organist I speak to talk about the acoustic as being one of the most important parts of the instrument, in a sense. You can't separate the two.
That's right. Just as if you were a singer, you don't want to sing in something that's all covered with felt and velvet.
Speaking of that renovation at United, is there some renovation work going on with some of the organs themselves that we're going to get a chance to hear?
Oh, at Salem College, they have rebuilt the organ this year. They sent all the reed pipes back to Holland.
How many pipes?
I don't know how many sets of reeds.
More than a dozen.
Those are trickier to adjust and bring up to snuff. And that's sort of a traditional thing. And so then this summer, two builders from the Funtrop Company have been here adjusting the sound on the other pipes. So you'll find the sound on the Funtrop much warmer and a much more unified sound. It should be really exciting to hear. The organ was originally built in the 1960s, and there was a sort of different concept of sound then than there is now.
Was it brighter back then or darker?
Harsher.
Harsher, yeah.
That would fall toward brighter, right?
Yeah.
And the same at Centenary. So with this now reverberant room, all that sort of things that were too straightforward and a little on the harsh side are warmer and rounder.
Nice. Mm-hmm. How are things from your expectations going in, and what's occurred so far with the sounds of the summer? Has it met your expectations with some surprises?
Oh, yes. It's been an overwhelming response. It's very interesting that none of the pieces have been duplicated. Each organ has got to choose what they wanted to play, and I think they probably double-checked to make sure what they're going to play hasn't already been played.
Yeah.
But it just each organ is different. So what on this organ could sound wonderful? That's basically where they go.
And then coming up on Monday, August 19th, this is, for this series, a unique opportunity because you'll be hearing from multiple soloists.
Exactly. Students at Salem and the School of the Arts. That goes all the way from high school students all the way to grad students. I'm not sure who will be playing because that's Dr. Olson's in a job to figure that out.
Sure. And we get a chance to hear the Funtrop organ and all of its glory post-renovation work.
Exactly. And what's interesting to hear different people play one organ is that it should sound different every time. They make different decisions, different choices, what stops to use.
Keyboardist Ray Ebert. For 30 years, Ray was organist at Rinalda House Museum of American Art. He's now organist emeritus at Centenary United Methodist Church after his 40-year tenure there. Ray, along with organists Tim Olson and Dreema Lovett, is the co-organizer of Sounds of the Summer, exploring the tones and colors of organs in Winston-Salem. Sounds of the Summer continues next week on Sunday night, August 4th at 7 o'clock at Ardmore United Methodist Church. Dreema Lovett will perform on that church's 1978 Noack organ. You'll find the complete summer performance schedule on our website, wfdd.org. Well, that's all for today's show. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia. Our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. And our intern is Kathleen Coker. You'll find podcasts of Triad Arts Weekend, links and photos to all of our guests, and more at WFDD.org. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. Please send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.